You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For the final installment of our Summer Stuff series, we're talking about gardening. Horticulturist Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC, joins us now to answer all of your gardening questions. Welcome back, Gerard.
Thank you, Leonard. Good to be here.
And I've been saying welcome back to you for 25 years or so. It's amazing.
It's true.
You've been coming on the show for such a long time. Whenever you do, we get a lot of calls, and we are inviting calls from listeners with questions about taking care of plants, getting rid of insects, cleaning up the storm-ravaged garden, if that was a problem, or any other gardening matter. Our phone number is 646-829-3985. You can also post your comments and questions on our show page at WNYC.org. We've been having lots of rain. Has this been a good summer for gardening?
No, it's been, you know, we've had record amounts of rain. We've had almost 19 inches of rain just in the month of August alone. So the weather has really played havoc on the tri-state area and the East Coast, as we all know. But, you know, we're hearing about farmers in Ulster County and in Dutchess County whose, you know, their crop is underwater right now. Farmers in New Jersey, where the Raritan River and the Passaic Rivers have, you know, crested at like 42 feet. And, you know, they're harvesting their crop, or they can harvest their crop because it's underwater right now.
Yeah, it's a weird contrast to last year when you came on and we talked about the lack of rain.
Exactly. So this is Mother Nature wreaking havoc. Farmers on Long Island, with all the tree damage and the power that is out, greenhouse operations and farm operations are, you know, without power. In New Jersey and in Long Island and the whole tri-state area is really suffering. So this has not been good. The very wet August has created lots of diseases for the home gardeners. They've noticed lots of powdery mildew on zucchini and tomatoes. And
there was a tomato blight that started affecting tomato plants a couple of years back.
Is that still with us? That was not so much this year because we didn't have as wet a spring. So the farmers were experiencing a great tomato harvest this year. But the previous spring, I believe it was when we had the tomato blight, was a disaster. So, you know, that's what... It's water and trees is on everyone's mind. The parks are closed down. Community gardeners all in the New York City area have suffered tree damage. We've been working on removing trees and things like that.
What about the plants and the wind?
Right. I myself personally was pulling in my window boxes on my own home in Brooklyn, and, you know, everyone was being cautioned to make sure that everything was secure outside their windows for the tropical storm that we experienced of Irene. So window boxes came in, and all the patio furniture came in. A lot of stuff in the garden had to come in. It gave gardeners a good chance to reassess the garden and to do a little more maintenance afterwards, but we certainly don't want to go through that again.
Is this nature's way of doing pruning that we might do otherwise? Because I'm sure most of the limbs that fall off of trees are the sick limbs.
Well, often also what's happening from the Parks Department, as Commissioner Benepe said, you know, a lot of the tree damage was in Queens in the five borough area. There was lots of tree damage that they're working on. They're working on primarily clearing the primary roads in Queens, and then the secondary streets, hopefully by the end of the week, will be done. But the big message from the commissioner was don't try to do any of that tree work yourself. A lot of the water that was absorbed by the trees made the trees much heavier. So the tree wasn't necessarily sick, but it got heavier with all the water that was absorbed into it, and some were dead limbs, yes.
And what about people's fruit trees? You can't take them inside during a
storm. No, absolutely not. They just had to, you know, endure, and there is a lot of tree damage community gardens, on the streets, in the parks, etc. So there's a lot of cleanup going on now. There'll probably be a lot of wood chip and mulch available from lots of tree companies that are doing a lot of this assessment and removal.
We are inviting listener calls at 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're already getting calls, so I thought I would put John from Paramus on the air. Hi, John.
How you doing, Leonard? I'd just like to ask, I'm having really a good year with my basil, and I hate to, you know, when it gets cold, it just starts to go. Is there anything I can do to keep it growing into the, way into the fall?
Well, yeah, I have some basil here for Leonard from one of our school gardens up at Randall's Island.
You brought a lot of stuff
here. I did. We brought our... Well, August is harvest month, so we've got a lot of harvest, and August is also the month to replant. So, you know, we still have 60 good days of growing season, so you could plant things like kohlrabi and kale and get a second harvest of spinach and basil and bunching onion. But as far as your basil goes, it's not winter hardy, but we could grow basil here up until about December. And the other thing to keep in mind is you could freeze basil. So even when the frost comes in December, you could harvest the leaves, dry them, and roll them up in plastic or aluminum or wax paper and put them in the freezer. And
could
they'll turn black, but it still gives you the great taste of basil.
I've done a million things with it like that. I've pureed them and put them in ice cube trays and
sure.
everything else. It's never the same. It's just not the same.
But wait a minute. I have a great suggestion for you, John. When you're making pesto, you should mm-hmm. blanch the basil leaves anyway. You just blanch them very quickly, and then you shock them in ice water. And it takes the acidity out of it, makes it actually much sweeter. So just blanch them, put them in cold water, put them in a baggie if you're not going to make pesto right away. By the way, if you make pesto, you can make up lots of pesto, and it lasts a very long time in the refrigerator. So there are all sorts of other things that you can do with the basil. Now, you brought, Gerard, you brought whole stems of basil.
Right.
Is that the best way to pick the basil, or do you just pick a leaf off?
Just picking the leaf is the best way because the stem will regenerate new growth. I harvested that pretty quickly with some people this morning. But to answer your question, you can grow basil indoors. It's an annual. As long as you have enough sun on a windowsill through the winter, you can grow it indoors.
Basil often gets tall and woody, and the leaves start fading in color. How do you avoid that and keep the plants small and bushy and
right.
prevent them from bolting?
This is the time of year in general for all herbs. It's a good idea to pinch back all your herbs in flower before they go to seed. That will give you a more vigorous plant and it'll prevent that woodiness. But as the basil ages, it does get woody on the oldest stems, and there's nothing you can do to avoid that.
And it affects the taste of the leaves, doesn't
it? Yeah,
it
does. So you want those the newer leaves at the top, and you want to prevent the plants from going to seed because that'll give you a better tasting crop from your basil harvest. The other thing to do, I wanted to remind you listeners, with all the rain, once the rivers have receded in New Jersey and the water has gone down and power is restored on Long Island and people can get back to their normal life, you might want to remember when you go out into the garden to cultivate your soil about 3 days after any heavy rain. That's generally what gardeners recommend to prevent that surge of new weed growth. And, of course, most of us dealing with all the rain, that will happen.
Let's go to Bruce. Hi, Bruce from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Yeah, Gerard. Bruce McInnes. Wondering if wind in a storm like we've just had has an effect, a desiccating effect on plant leaves enough that that's a reason to pull window boxes into the house.
Absolutely. Good point, Bruce. You know, there's lots of desiccation that goes on from wind, from winter cold damage. So what we've just experienced was mostly wind damage, and the broadleaf evergreens in general experience that. But sure, lots of desiccation. Remember, plants lose their moisture from the openings underneath the leaves. So as Bruce is pointing out, that wind damage caused a lot of damage for the trees as well, especially along the coastlines.
Thank you so much for your call. George from Bay Ridge. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I have house plants that I put on my deck to get some, you know, light and air and stuff. When I'm ready to bring them back in, what's the best way to do it so that I avoid bringing all the insects in
right.
with them?
And when is the key question there, too. I'm glad you brought that up, George. August and September is the best time to slowly start bringing in your houseplants. People wait till late October when it's too cold. The reason now is best is because our indoor temperature is similar to the outdoor temperature. It's about 70, 75 degrees, maybe a little warmer, 80 these days. But that will have less of an impact on your houseplant as you transition it indoors. If you wait till October when it's 50, there's a 20 degree difference between your home and the outdoors, and your leaves will drop off. So now is the time to bring them in. Remove them from the pot that they're growing in to remove any kind of soil, and gently tease the roots a little bit and repot them with sterilized soil, potting soil that does not have weeds or insects or diseases.
Can we sterilize it ourselves, or do we have to
you
buy
can,
sterilized
soil? You can, but it's a process. You have to heat soil up to about 120 degrees in your oven, like on a cookie tray. Most people don't want to go through that, so they buy sterilized soil. But in college, I remember we used to sterilize our own soil in big vats, and you have to raise it to about 120 degrees if you can do that.
Pest control is always an issue for gardeners. Are there non-toxic options for getting rid of bugs like aphids?
Yes, and you know, we had 25 schools visit the Randall's Island Learning Garden with Randall's Island Sports Foundation this year, and the harvest that you see in front of you.
Yeah, you brought in
Leonard,
a lot of
stuff.
Yeah,
the Swiss chard, the lacinato kale, the Greek oregano, the tomatoes, the eggplant. That's all from the Learning Garden at Randall's Island, and it's totally organic. And what we did was we released praying mantis and also ladybugs early on in the season. The kids had a great time releasing those ladybugs. We also use things like Dipel, which is a bacteria that's totally organic that attacks the cabbage worm that eats the cabbage leaves that you'll see flying around in the vegetable garden. So we used organic measures, and we still, as you see, have a harvest.
You also brought rice. I didn't know you could grow rice in New York City.
Well, I'm working with some really talented people up at Randall's Island Sports Foundation, and we built a rice paddy. And 25.
You can't do that on your deck or your terrace, can you?
You can, actually. It was a pretty easy process. If you have a pond liner and some interlocking masonry units, we built a raised bed of masonry, and then we lined it with a pond liner. We put in an air pump, and we actually germinated the rice in plastic cups that were then transferred into mucky soil. And they're now about 6 feet high, and they're producing the germ. As you see, the rice is starting to come into production for the school kids when they come back in September.
If you're growing herbs and other vegetables on a balcony in the city and you find aphids, where do they come from?
Aphids are soil-borne for the most part. They get passed from one plant to another, so you may introduce a plant from a nursery or a garden center that has them in the soil. They then hatch, and then they infest your plants. They come from your neighbor's plants. They come from a variety of different places.
I always blame it on my neighbor.
That gets you in trouble sometimes, I'm sure. But with aphids, to prevent them from coming into the house, you might want to check the undersides of the plant's leaves before you bring them in. Spray them with a heavy spray of hose water. You could even look for with dabs of alcohol on a Q-tip for mealybug and things like that, or scale and remove it from underneath the leaves or the stems. But inspect the undersides of any of the plants you're bringing in. Change the soil.
And the alcohol doesn't have a negative effect?
The alcohol is fine if you're removing mealybug and scale and things like that.
My guest is horticulturist Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC, and he is here for the final installment of our Summer Stuff series. We're taking your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can post your comments and questions on our show page at WNYC.org, and we'll be back to a lot of those comments and questions after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with our Summer Stuff series, the last installment this summer, in fact. And our guest is a regular contributor to this show, horticulturist Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC. We invite your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can also post your comments and questions on our show page at WNYC.org. You do a lot of stuff, including community gardens and getting kids in the schools to learn how to grow things, and right. more and more schools are joining in on that.
Exactly.
But what about New Green City?
I'm glad you brought that up. Any school teachers that are listening, you can go to our website. We have a new website specifically for school teachers. It's called growtolearn.org. It's part of our Grow NYC initiative to reach out to schools across the city, working with the mayor's office and many other city agencies and partners. We're actually involving lots of schools in the five boroughs with lots of different partners in getting schools, getting a garden in every school in the five boroughs. And New Green City is a free event on October 5th. It's one of our big public events that will happen in Union Square from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. On Wednesday, October 5th, there'll be interactive exhibits. All the green people will be there. Farmers will be there. There'll be all sorts of environmentally friendly exhibits. I'll be there to test people's soil. If you look for our booth and you bring a tablespoon of your garden soil, I'll be able to test it for your pH. And that's a free service. And that'll all happen at New Green City, October 5th, Wednesday, in Union Square from 10 to 6.
And Union Square, of course, has gone from just being the first of the major green markets to a national phenomenon.
It's amazing. I love reading about it in the New York Magazine. I wanted to remind your listeners, too, Leonard, that if you're harvesting, you know, once we get through all this Mother Nature drought flooding and tree damage, and you can focus on your garden. Think about green manure crops. This is the time of year when you pull out your fall crops. You could plant winter rye. A lot of the farmers will do that, or plant ryegrass or soybean, and that remains green throughout the winter and enriches the soil.
A friend who's usually quite peace-loving asked me to find out whether it's legal to kill squirrels. She says they've eaten every one of her tomatoes so far this year, just days before they were ripe enough for her to pick them.
I'm sure it is not legal to kill squirrels, and squirrels are actually a big tourist attraction in this city, and we work with the City Hall Garden park staff, and we battle squirrels on a daily basis in a school garden, and the best thing we found is heavy wire mesh, the square wire mesh that we have created tents over the raised bed so that the kids can garden, and when we're done gardening, we put those tents over the boxes, and the squirrels stay out.
Because people suggest everything from using cayenne pepper, which doesn't work. What about those little machines that run on batteries that make annoying noises?
Well, you know, the squirrels are pretty smart here in New York, and they get used to all those things. They get used to the scarecrows, the shiny metal blowing in the wind. All those things eventually wear away.
Haley from Boston writes in, "My peace lilies are not doing well this year. I think it's from all the rain. They've started to grow yellow mushrooms, and lots of them. Even after repotting in fresh soil, the mushrooms grow back. What can I do to save them from the fungus?" And
okay.
I know some mushrooms have grown in a couple of my pots as well. I'm afraid to eat them.
Don't eat them. You shouldn't do that. But mushrooms are a
white
sign
things.
Of acid soil. So all you simply have to do, Haley, in Boston, I think, is to put a little bit of lime. Get a tablespoon of lime, as for you as well, Leonard. Just put a little lime on top of the mushroom, and that will kill it. Mushrooms only survive in acid soil. So by sprinkling them with some garden lime, you'll get rid of them.
Now, on the other hand, there are some mushrooms that are worth a lot of money. Is there a way I can encourage chanterelles or morels to grow in my garden?
Now, at the Hattie Carthan Urban Farm in Bedford-Stuyvesant, they seeded mushrooms, and Yannette Fleming is an avid mushroom gardener out there in Bed-Stuy, believe it or not. So you can grow mushrooms, but it takes a very specific type of environment. You know, I wouldn't recommend it except if you really are an expert gardener. But mushrooms are a little particular, and even people who are specialized in mushroom study have difficulty distinguishing poisonous from non-poisonous mushrooms. So be very careful about it.
You have to put them under a microscope.
Yeah, people like Steve Brill, the wild man who goes in Central Park and harvests edibles, you know, they are people who know which are poisonous and which not. But the average person is not able to distinguish them, so you'd be taking a risk.
Lisa from Kew Gardens, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for picking up. I'm calling because I have been having a problem recently with ghost ants, G-H-O-S-T, ghost ants. And they're teeny, teeny, tiny guys. I've been caulking up all the openings I have, and they've been working their way in all over, and I'm trying to come up with some type of natural way to have them stop or go somewhere else or somebody else's garden or wherever.
Yeah.
Teeny, tiny fellows.
I mean, I have a limited knowledge of this, but I would suggest you go with a professional exterminator if your problem is that serious, and you can tell them that you only want to use non-toxic means of eradicating them. But my understanding is you want to try and find trail them back to where the nest is. Where are they coming from? Where is the origin of the ants? Where is the colony coming from? You might be caulking windows and doors, but they're coming in a different way. So try to follow them and see where the nest is. Once you can establish that, then you could sort of dig around and see maybe it's an old piece of wood in the window that they're establishing a colony in, and then you could physically remove it or you could have it treated. People have some success with boric acid, but it sounds like you have a serious problem and you might want to go with an environmentally friendly exterminator.
Thank you so much for your call. Caroline from Ridge, Long Island. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I didn't have any trees go down during the storm, but several big branches were snapped off, and I was wondering, do I just let nature take its course, or do I need to climb up there with a chainsaw and smooth out the damage?
Yeah, I'm going to reiterate what our commissioner here said in New York City, Adrian Benepe. Please do not try to do any of this tree work yourself. It's very risky, very dangerous. Again, when I said to Leonard earlier, with all this flooding, the trees have an enormous amount of water inside of them that has made them that much heavier. So in my own neighborhood, we had a 25-foot sugar maple split on Sunday after the storm. No winds, no nothing. It was because of the weight of all the water from the tropical storm Irene that happened afterwards. So you don't want to get – it's illegal, first of all, to be climbing in any street trees on your own property. You want to be very cautious. You could be very injured. Leave it to the professionals. Mother Nature does heal herself. Don't worry too much about the scar that's left. What's more important is there a threat to life? Is it possibly going to fall on your home and injure your family or people walking by? And that's what LIPA and all the other utilities are working on, removing these trees from the power lines and then securing people in their homes with trees that have fallen on top. My own brother and sister are without power on Long Island, and they will be for the whole week because of tree damage out in East Northport.
My guest is horticulturist Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC, and he's here for the final installment of our Summer Stuff series. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Our number here is 646-829-3985, where you can post your comments and questions on our show page at WNYC.org. And one of our listeners, Janet from Manhattan, asks, is the public invited to Randall's Island to see the gardens that you were talking about?
Yes, Randall's Island is a public park. It's open to the public, and there are 35 ball fields up there. And as well, there are 600 community gardens around the city that are open to the public as well for you to visit. The Randall's Island Garden is specifically for schools in East Harlem and the Bronx that don't have school gardens, and they could come to Randall's Island and garden there. It's a learning garden. But Randall's Island is open to the public, and it's a beautiful space, a beautiful public park run by the Randall's Island Sports Foundation.
Another listener asked, what are the advantages of composting? Can anybody start a compost?
Yes. A lot of people think there's some mystery to composting, but really composting has been happening since, you know, we've been farming since the beginning of time, probably, where we have been planting and had an agrarian lifestyle. When plants decay and organisms like earthworms and beetles and bacteria attack the organisms like plants and cause them to decay. They revert back to soil. It's very simple. And composting is just us helping that decaying process along.
Well, that means we have to get worms. You have to get a big can with holes in it, at least one can.
You could do it lots of different ways, yeah.
But probably about two-thirds of my garbage goes into my compost cans.
Sure.
So I don't have to throw everything out for the sanitation department to pick it up.
Absolutely, and that's the big thing. And at Grow NYC, we're encouraging people to bring their kitchen compost to the markets. And you could actually bring your kitchen compost waste. You could put a can under your kitchen, and any scraps from your kitchen waste can go into the can, and then you could bring it to the local markets, and we'll collect it, and we actually process it and turn it back into compost and then provide it back at the markets for people to purchase. So you could do composting on your own. You could go to a local community garden. There's no mystery to it, but there is a right and a wrong way. No meats, no oils, no fish. You have to turn a compost pile. You have to aerate it. You have to make sure you have all the right ingredients.
But you can use all your coffee grounds.
You can.
If you have a fireplace, you can put the ash from your fireplace.
Although that causes some nitrogen problems, but yes, that's true. And eggshells and all those good things can go into compost piles. And if your listeners want information about that, on our website, Grow NYC, there are free fact sheets. If you look up free fact sheets, you could download 50 or 60 fact sheets, and compost is one of them.
And the Green Market at Union Square sells worms and sells compost.
Exactly.
Cans.
The Lower East Side Ecology Center, you could buy 2 pounds of red worms and start your own compost.
Elizabeth in Windsor Terrace asks, writes, a significant sinkhole has developed in my backyard. It's not related to construction and is in a space that has had shrubs for 17 years or more. The hole is about 4 feet deep and 4 feet around. It may be related to the runoff from neighborhood roofs. The neighbor's gutters are not tied into the sewers, and they're about 3 feet higher. And suddenly I lost this thing because...
Sinkholes, that's kind of scary. I mean, cesspools are an issue. That's the first thing that comes up in my mind that really scares me. Whenever you see a sinkhole in Manhattan in community gardens, there often can be a dangerous cavity from a building with an open basement or an oil tank that's underneath it. So we're always very cautious, and we recommend that people get professional engineers to come and look at it. A 4-foot sinkhole is a little suspect in my mind. Was there an old cesspool there? Is there a possibility of cave-ins? With all the rain from the tropical storm Irene, a lot of the soil was washed away, and we're seeing more and more sinkholes. So if you are concerned, have someone check it out, and certainly don't let your family go near it until you know that it's not going to collapse any further. The other thing, Leonard, I wanted to tell people that this time of year in the perennial garden, this is the last time or the last opportunity. If you love your peonies, you can't transplant your peonies beyond like the middle of September. And now is a good time to divide iris and bleeding heart, dicentra, oriental poppy, wild aster, and your evergreens in the garden, your yews and your junipers. They're starting to go dormant now. So if you want to transplant your evergreens, this is the time to do that.
If we want to attract bees or butterflies, are there certain flowers?
Oh, sure, yeah. In my own backyard and in many community gardens, trumpet vine is great. In fact, I was really pleased to see in August hummingbirds visiting my Brooklyn backyard from the trumpet vine. Buddleia is another one. Impatience. There are a list of plants that you can get on our website for attracting bees and butterflies to the garden.
And is that good for your garden?
It is, because we want pollinators. Remember, we need the flowers to be pollinated in order to get the harvest that I brought today. In order to get the tomatoes and the peppers and the melons, those flowers have to be pollinated by bees and butterflies and moths and bats and all those great things.
Let's take another call. This one is from Chris from Floral Park, Queens. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, please.
Hi. I'm just calling. I'm the event coordinator for the Queens County Fair. It's going to be on September 17th and 18th, and anyone who has any fruits or vegetables or flowers that haven't been wiped out by the flooding or any other disasters are welcome to enter them for a ribbon competition.
That's great. We love that at the end of the season, and that's a great way to end the harvest season with school groups of to bring the harvest like we have here, the Swiss chard, the lacinato kale, the tomatoes, your biggest sunflower, your largest tomato. That's a great way to end the season.
Many listeners live in apartments without any outdoor space. Is it possible to successfully grow vegetables in pots or in window boxes?
When you say vegetables indoors, it's tricky because most fruiting vegetables need 10 to 12 hours of direct sunlight. Some apartments
may have
that.
And they need a lot of soil, don't they?
And you have to have a substantial amount of soil, a foot deep or more. So if you can provide that, there are some loft spaces, I'm sure, indoors where people have a large amount of southern exposure and they do have 10 to 12 hours of sunlight, and people are willing to bring in 12 inches of soil in containers where they want to grow vegetables. So it's possible, but you have to provide those kinds of environments.
Victoria Manhattan writes, I'm a beginning container gardener who plans to move to a more rural area soon. What books can you suggest to learn about vegetable gardening? I just finished, she says, Botany for Gardeners by Brian Capon and loved it.
Great. I also like Barbara Damrosch is The Garden Primer. So that's one general book on gardening, but there are so many I can't begin to suggest all of them. But Cornell has a great series. The Brooklyn Botanic Garden has a great series of handbooks on growing containers, vegetables in containers. And again, Barbara Damrosch is. Linda Yang has a great one on balcony gardening and growing vegetables. Rodale has incredible publications on organic vegetable container gardening. So you have quite a choice.
Kathleen and Dolores from Long Island are worried about the exposed tree roots in their yard. Is the tree in danger of falling down?
Yeah, for Kathleen and Dolores, I would say, be mindful that your town will probably manage the danger and of the roots from the sidewalk roots that are coming up. It happens in the five boroughs as well. But I just want to remind people that your street trees are a property of the municipality. And you really want to contact your local community board or your city council person and make them aware of it, and they'll come and correct it.
Now, Gerard, we've run out of time, and we have lots of calls and have a lot of people writing in. So what should they do? How do they get in touch with
people you? People can contact us. You could show up at Union Square on October 5th, Wednesday, and meet me in person. Bring your soil sample, and I'll test your soil for pH. Bring a tablespoon of soil 6 inches down in your garden. Come to the Grow NYC booth at Union Square at New Green City on October 5th, and we could give out public information. But go to the website, grownyc.org. There are lots of free publications. Also, we tweet, we Facebook. There's also Grow to Learn for school teachers. There's a whole new website on vegetable gardening with kids for school gardens.
And how, if a parent wants the kids to get involved in growing, are there special programs that they can enlist them in?
Yes. On our website, the Grow to Learn website has an application for teachers for a school visit to the Randall's Island Learning Garden, and you can download that on our website.
Gerard Lordell is a horticulturist and a floriculturist, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow New York City. Thank you so much for being on our Summer Stuff series today.
Thanks, Leonard. It's always a pleasure.